So I just want you to pay attention to this picture for a second. Above the water is what you can see. Below the water is a minefield you might be walking into. That's what you have to keep in mind. Everybody has stuff under the surface that you have no idea what they're dealing with. As police officers, we went out on the street every day dealing with other people's problems. This is what people don't understand these days, in this country especially. You have a fight with your spouse, you go to work. Is that going to affect you as much as it's going to affect the police officer that's on the street that has a fight with their spouse and then has to go deal with a domestic situation? So you don't know. You have no idea what's happening with the person that you're dealing with. So much under the surface could be going on that you know nothing about. Just always keep that in mind. Try to determine what's driving that behavior. Yeah, we tell you to avoid I because you're starting out using this stuff. When you get used to using tactical empathy and you get used to, you know, keeping yourself over here and putting all the deference on them, you can put I in there and it doesn't come across as self-serving as it does when you're first learning. So we're basically instructing you. We use Shuhari, martial arts term for, you know, the beginning, and then you're here doing this, and then by the time you get to re, you're kind of right in your own way of doing things because you understand the basis of tactical empathy and what's happening. If you're back in Shu, if you start using I too much, you're going to get into the I understand trap. And that's going to make it more about you. And you don't want to do that. So for practice purposes, we tell you, try to get it out of your system at this point. We use I all the time, and people hear us do it, but we've done it for so long that it doesn't take the empathy away because we know how to do it without taking the empathy away.
You're not always going to get it right. I don't always get it right. I said I don't understand how we got here, you know? And in that moment, you're not always going to get it right. If you mess up, don't let that bother you. If you show deference, they'll forgive you. When I said that I would adopt his daughter, I meant it. I have 8 children, 30 grandchchildren, and 6 great-grandchildren. So I love kids. And if that's what it was going to take in that moment, I couldn't do it in every situation. But in that moment, I genuinely meant what I said, and he knew that. And because I meant what I said, it made him feel like, okay, this guy understands what I'm going through. Even if he know he didn't want me to have the little girl.
It's all about, once, like what I said earlier, delve into what's not being said. What did he know? He knew the guy was going to die. He knew he always promised to take care of this kid. So what was happening there? He was going to take her with him to prevent anything bad happening to her. So Troy went with that because that's what was not being said, is that he needed to know somebody had her before he would be okay dying from whatever terminal disease that was. So you focus on what's not being said, okay? So presenting emotion, what you can see above the surface, latent emotion is what's underneath. That's what you're going for. The way you get there is staying curious, okay? Stay curious about what's happening. And also listening. Because Troy was at empathetic listening in that situation, because when you're in a hostage situation like that, that's where your brain is. You're at the top level of listening. You have to be. You don't miss much. So when you hear that and you realize the missing piece is, he wants this kid to be taken care of. So I can offer that. So what's not being said? All right. What does negotiation mean to you? Anybody? Yes.
Improving all my relationships.
Okay. Anybody else? Yes.
Collaboration.
I just want to point out that the people that have already volunteered are now not scared of us, and they're both answering questions out loud. And this one asking a question, so I'm just saying, we don't bite most of the time. Anyone else? What does negotiation mean to you?
Navigating outcomes.
Okay, so you guys are all ahead of where the Georgetown student that was asked this question was. How do I get the most while giving up the least? That's what it used to be about. That's what negotiation was about. You're in there, you're fighting for yourself, you're gunning down. That's the antiquated way of doing things. Hence, it's above the antiquated plane. What's that plane? Who knows? Somebody knows. Well, not that one, the old one.
It's like the corn duster.
Corn duster. Yeah, it looks like that, right? It's a Sopwith Camel. It's a British plane that's like from 1917 or something. Old, antiquated. Okay, that's why that question is above that plane. Now, what's the other one? I know I got a... Yeah, Star Trek Enterprise. What's the serial number on it? Come on, there's Trekkies in here somewhere. You can admit it, I like Star Trek. Okay, so now it's coming out. So what's the beginning of that show? What are they doing? What's their purpose? Yes, to boldly go where no one's gone before, to explore new worlds, and what's the rest? Blah, blah, blah. What's the rest? Yeah, God discovered. Okay. So, in the words of Spock, how do we prosper? So collaboration, how do we prosper? That's where we're going with negotiation now. It used to be that you went in there to get the best for you and giving up the least. Now it's about how do you make it work so that both sides prosper. That's what we advocate. That's what the Black Swan Group came about for, because that's what we advocate. Okay. Is there ever a time you're not hiding information? Anybody? Yeah, everyone's like, I don't want to say that because you're just going to say, what are you hiding? What's up? I'm going to answer this question. No. The thing is, a lot of times you don't realize that you're doing it. When you're in a negotiation with someone, your stuff is here, their stuff is here, and there's an overlap in the middle. That's what you know about each other, that little middle piece there. You know that there are things on the other side that if you got that information, it would change what everything looked like moving forward. It's information that would be great for you to have. The other side may be hiding it on purpose. They may not be hiding it on purpose. It may just be something that they don't realize is important to you. So no matter how much research you do on the other side, no matter how many things you think you know about the other side, when you go in, there are things that are hidden from you. You might not realize that they're having problems with their second vice president who's about to get kicked out the door. You don't know that yet. They're hiding that from you. No one's going to come out and say that, but it could be an issue. So what you need to do is keep an open mind about things you may not understand about the other side. These are what we call those black swans, okay? So you don't know their deadlines. You don't know their budgets. You don't know all that stuff going on the other side of their company. They're not going to tell you. They also don't know that about you either, okay? When you're gathering information, what you're doing is you're looking for the black swans. Black swans, those unknown unknowns that once you know about them, they change the whole scope of everything moving forward. That golden nugget of information. So how do you find them? You get information, but we don't ask questions. Yes, labels, mirrors, so gathering information. So you were right, but the way you went about it wasn't exactly the way we want you to think about it. When you go into a negotiation, most people will set a goal, and they try to stick to that goal all the way through. What I want you to remember is if you go in married to the goal that you want at the other side, what are you missing? Opportunity. If you are so focused on what you want, you're going to miss something that comes along that might be even better. Because you're so focused on getting that goal, there's 10 other things that you just missed. Laws of negotiation gravity, we have those in place because they're absolutes. Now, the thing about it is, Einstein can't even tell you how gravity works. He knows what it does. It basically holds us on this earth, so when we're flying around, we're all not flying off, right? That's how it works. But he doesn't know, I mean, that's what it does. He doesn't know how it works. And if Einstein can't tell us how it works, I'm gonna go with nobody knows. So the way we look at our stuff, we have these laws of negotiation gravity. Some of them are backed up by science. Some of them we can show you the science that's been done to show that they are true. Others, we just know work. We just know they work. From practice, from doing it, we know they work. So we don't exactly know how gravity works, but we know it does. Some of our laws of negotiation gravity, we don't know how they work, but we know they do. First one. Urge to correct is irresistible. People cannot wait to tell you how wrong you have it. And you know what? That is amazing because what are you getting? Information. So don't feel attacked when somebody corrects you. It's okay, go with that correction because you're getting information. Don't worry about being defensive. Don't worry about looking silly because you got it wrong. Just worry about how they correct you and the information you get from it. Last impression is the lasting impression. People will remember a few different things about an interaction with you. They'll remember the most important moment that affected them the most, and they'll remember the last thing that happened, and they'll remember the last thing the most. The reason this is important is because if you go into a negotiation and it's not going well and you're not going to come out of this the way you want to come out of it, don't ruin the relationship. Don't burn the bridge. Use that last impression to make a lasting impression as a positive thing, because you don't know. 6 months from now, the contract you were trying to get might explode with the other people they picked, and then they're going to come to you and say, hey, I know 6 months ago we didn't want to do business with you, but you know, you guys were great, so let's try this again. You want to preserve the relationship down the road, so make sure that your last impression is a positive, lasting impression. Labeling negatives diffuses them. Kind of talked about that a little bit earlier. Fear of loss, single biggest driver of human emotion and decision making. Fears are always fears, just like there are always emotions involved. You just got to figure out what they are. Your voice will induce emotional reactions in your counterpart. You saw that in the 60 seconds exercise, how they got dialed up and then they got dialed down. So let me ask you this. If we talk about the components of a message and we divide it into three, content, delivery, syntax, which one is the most important?
Delivery.
I hear delivery, I hear syntax. All of them. So if you had to assign a ratio to this, what percent, and it adds up to 100 because that's how ratios work, right? So each one gets a part of 100. How are you going to like dole that out? Yeah.
Delivery, 70, syntax, 20.
Okay, that's not bad. 738.55. Now, this is a scientific thing. A professor at UCLA, Professor Maharabian, I think his name was, 60s and 70s, he did a lot of research about this, and he found that it does make a difference, and that people care more about how you say something than what you say. Remember, I kind of gave it away earlier when I said you can pretty much say anything to anybody. If your tone is good, kind of what I meant by that. So, because if you look at this, 38 and 55 adds up to 93. And no, I just didn't do that in my head. I just know it because math is not my strong point. So 7% content, 93% is how you're delivering it or how you're saying it or what you're putting behind it. Nothing to do with what you're saying. So having said that, what about emails? Do emails have tone? Do black letters on a white background actually have a tone? Yes. I'm going to go against you and I'm going to say no. What I put on a computer to you doesn't have a tone. You assign the tone. So I can't control it. That's the thing you have to remember. Tone is so important that you're going to imagine it. Problem with that is if you send an email to someone and they're reading that email, if they're in a bad mood, what kind of tone is that email going to have? It's not going to go well. If they're in a really happy mood, no matter what you're saying, it's probably going to go okay because they're assigning the tone, which means you have no control, which is why email, even though it's the way most people like to communicate these days, it's not the best way. The best way is to use your very important tool, which is your voice. So use an email to drive them to the phone. How many people like to read long emails? Yeah, no hands. How many people write long emails? Yes. Yeah, don't be afraid to say yes. Everybody does it. I'm going to tell you right now, me being the assertive, sarcastic, kind of pain in the ass person that I am, if you send me a 5-paragraph email, I'll be lucky to get through the first 3 sentences, and then I'll look down and go, oh, no, that's not happening. I may, depending on how important you are at the moment to me, I may get through each sentence, like one sentence of each paragraph, get the gist, and move on. People will intermittently listen when you send an email. That's what happens. Or they might listen for that rebuttal in their own mind, but they're not going to go all the way through and get all the detail you want them to get. So better thing is 3 to 5 sentences, a couple accusations audits, drive them to the phone where you can use your powerful tool, which is your voice.